Hello, this is Monocle Reads. I'm Georgina Godwin. My guest today is Harriet Tice, who started her working life as a criminal barrister. Now, you may know her for her very successful first novel, Blood Orange. It's a Sunday Times bestseller, and it was the third most downloaded book on Amazon during lockdown. Well, she's now written another addictive, knife-sharp, twisty thriller, which combines her dark imagination with her criminal barrister experience and schoolgate politics. Harriet, welcome to the show. What drove that conversion from barrister to writer?
Well, there was an interim period. I left the bar after I had children because I didn't find that it was a career that was possible really to pursue part time. And I became quite frustrated dealing just with the children, that I'd gone from having quite a busy full-on practice to being the person who specialised in where the pants were kept in the house. And I'd always read. I mean, I did a degree in English in the first place. And I mean, I've always read throughout my life. And eventually I just thought, well, I'll start writing. I mean, I was terrified of the idea at the beginning, but then the more I did, the more I liked it. And I became more and more driven with the idea of trying to complete a novel and then trying to find an agent, and hadn't really thought much beyond what might happen when I got an agent. But that was a driving force for several years, which kept me quite distracted just from dealing with the kids, which is not to say just, but, you know, it's a very kind of practical thing, especially when they're younger, that you're doing a lot of grunt work. So it was nice to find a way of using my brain and some of the training that I had done as a barrister. It had always felt rather a waste that I'd spent so much time studying and then working. And the fact that I was able to subsume it into some of my novels has been something I've been very pleased about.
I mean, you're absolutely right. People never talk about the fact that the company of very young children is sometimes extremely dull.
It is rather. I mean, they are lovely, but there's only so long you can gaze. You know, there's times you do look for a bit of, you know, witty repartee, and babies are not really renowned for that, it has to be said.
You did the wonderful creative writing course at UAE. I mean, that must have been another big marker on your way to success.
Yes. Oh, I mean, it was integral. It was integral to going from being an aspiring writer to becoming a published author. That it was the crime fiction, the specialised course for crime fiction, which was a low residency course over 2 years. And the dissertation at the end of it was to be a complete manuscript of, you know, potentially publishable quality. And so it was during that time that I wrote Blood Orange. And it was, you know, something that was workshopped by my cohort of students and also, you know, discussed at length with my tutors. So, you know, without that, it's not. And it's through that that I was introduced to my agent, that they became aware of my work. So, yes, I mean, without that, I mean, who knows, you know. So I think this it was a truly transformational experience. Yes.
Now, Blood Orange was incredibly successful. Were you surprised by that?
Yes. I mean, you know, I wrote it for, you know, as part of the MA. I had a readership of 14 people. I think that there were 11 students, well, in fact, 13 people, no, 10 students, and 11 including me, and then three tutors. So it was, you know, it was quite liberating to an extent because I wasn't thinking about there being anyone else. I just wrote what I wanted to write. And I remember once I got my agent, and that really had been the end of what I had been hoping for, was to get an agent. I hadn't, as I say, thought, well, what happens next? It's, you know, submission to publishers with an eye to it actually becoming a book. And I had my final meeting with my agent, Veronique, before she sent it out to publishers. And I actually said to her, do you actually think someone's going to want, you know, will someone want to read this? And she just looked at me and laughed and said, oh, yes, I think so. And it took 10 days for the preemptive offer to come through from Wildfire, my publishers. And I mean, and even then you just sit there going, I don't know, well, this is all just a bit, something's gone wrong. There must have been a mistake. And yeah, I mean, I think you can't possibly expect this for your first book. I mean, there are so many books published and so many brilliant books published that you can't have any kind of, you know, hope or expectation. You know, you hope it might reach a couple of people. This is unimaginable. So, yeah.
Well, congratulations. It's done extremely well. But what it has also done is it's left you in this position where really you're very vulnerable to second book syndrome. Now, luckily, it's done and dusted. You've written your second book. It's published. It's out now. But tell us about that feeling and that whole process.
Well, it was... it was interesting. I mean, there was the freedom when writing Blood Orange that it was the book of my, you know, it was the book of my guts, and it was the book I wanted to write. And yes, there was a deadline, but there was no contract, certainly no expectation of readership, with the idea that people already had a benchmark against which to compare the new book, that people might have expectations. Those people who had loved Blood Orange would perhaps be wanting more of the same. Those people who hated it would be looking to confirm their dislike. That it's like a cacophony around me of all the different voices sort of coming in with different levels of expectation and pressure. And I think that the biggest thing I had to do was to learn how to tune all of it out and just go back to it being me sitting with a laptop, making things up and trying to put them in some kind of workable order. And it didn't work the first time round. I wrote a full draft of a different book in 2018, which just went completely wrong. And I did give it to the publishers, but very much with a kind of, I know this has not worked. And so I had to start again at the beginning of 2019, which was just the point at which Blood Orange was first published. And that was an interesting thing to have to do. But I think, you know, I learned so much post-publication in terms simply of how to manage not reading reviews, not looking at Goodreads, not looking at Amazon, just sort of keeping away from, you know, the book Blood Orange was out there and it was really nothing to do with me anymore in terms of what people made of it. And I had to sort of go back to just putting myself back in a bubble of getting on with the work. And I mean, it's such a relief. It's such a relief to have completed something that people seem to be enjoying, you know, and that's to see positive feedback coming back from, you know, from, say, book bloggers who love Blood Orange and are saying we were really worried that we'd be disappointed and we're not. And that's just, it's a huge weight off me. I can't tell you how happy I am just to have passed this hurdle, really.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about the book. It's called The Lies You Told. And of course, schools are in the headlines right now with the disputed exam results.
Yes,
and schoolgate politics can become overwhelming, can't it? And that's really at the heart of this book.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I had 11 years of primary school gate experience, but my children are now 16 and 12, so they're both safely off at secondary school. I mean, safely off at school is, of course, a bit of a non-thing at the moment with the with the no school since February. And yeah, aspects of it. And I think it's something that, you know, I gather from speaking to friends, from you know, you read stories about it in the paper, there's lots of novels about it, that it's very fraught. People do become, like, I mean, people are very anxious about their children's well-being and how they're getting on. And I think sometimes people also sublimate their own ambitions and frustrations into their children and sort of see their children as an extension of themselves rather than as people in their own right. Mm. And I think it's through that a lot of these politics and this unpleasantness can develop. I mean, obviously mine is very fictional, and that you would very much hope that if people were genuinely to behave like this in real life, that someone would call in social services. But, you know, it's I think it's rife. It's rife that we all become so fraught from, you know, antenatal classes onwards, really.
Mm. And of course, this has many of the themes that we saw in Blood Orange: gender norms, victimhood, abuse, and moral standards for female characters. Do you think that female characters in particular are held to stronger standards, higher standards than their male counterparts?
Yes, very, very much so. The reader responses, some of the reader responses I received to Alison, the main character of Blood Orange, were quite extraordinary. She seemed to raise a level of anger that, you know, I just sort of sit there going, you know, she's not real and the child's not real. It's not, none of this is real. But I mean, even very recently, I had an Instagram review where I had actually been tagged into it, and it was, Harriet Tice, you had the chance to create a strong feminist character and you blew it, you bombed it. It's like, oh, what? Hang on a minute. You know, it's all right. It's not that bad.
But also, how interesting, how interesting. She's not perfect.
She's not perfect. And it's a really, that the whole range of readers, from people saying she's so relatable to people saying they wanted to shake her, even when they've got to the end of it. And if one actually breaks her behaviour down in Blood Orange, that she's a, you know, she drinks and she smokes a bit and she's sometimes late back, but her child's never neglected, her child's never abandoned, her child's never, you know, in any danger whatsoever. And yet there's this absolute fury about how she's the worst mother in the world, whereas fictional male characters, you know, say male detectives, are often like that, especially when they're caught up in big cases. No one's sitting there saying, oh, John Rebus is a terrible father. I mean, he might himself feel that he has failed as a father, and that's, you know, that's his own character progression. But the readership love John Rebus. They don't sit there in judgment over him. And I think that when I was writing The Lies You Told, that was one of the factors, was that I had been, in a way, it was rather naive of me, that I certainly wasn't painting Alison in Blood Orange as being perfect, but I didn't expect people to hate her. I really didn't expect people to hate her, and I certainly didn't hate her myself. I mean, I thought that she was flawed, but you know, I'm fond of her. And so when it came to writing Sadie, I think I felt quite strongly that I wanted to try and write someone who, that there wasn't that level of, there might be some judgment that to which she could be exposed, but I just thought, I want a break for a bit. I'd quite like not to have characters, you know, where people say they hate everyone in the book. And I wanted to see if I could write someone who was nice. And in fact, after the first draft, you know, it was a bit like, she's so anodyne, can you not put a bit of edge in? And I was like, oh, okay. And that was one of the journeys of the second novel syndrome, actually, was that, you know, it doesn't matter. You just have to try and write a realistic character and not worry about whether people are going to like them or not. That's a lesson you have to go through. But yes, I think absolutely that female characters are, and I it's partly that sort of Madonna whore dichotomy that people, women are not really allowed to exist in the gray, that they can only be one or the other. And secondly, I sort of feel that almost to an extent, some of the most angry responses almost came from internalized misogyny, or from a desire of, you know, a woman reader might relate too heavily to someone who's so flawed and might think, well, actually, you know, I could end up in that situation, and be so horrified at the thought that they have to do this very aggressive pushing away. It's very curious and quite interesting to watch.
Absolutely. And I'm so interested in that this kind of female response, this female aggression, which you do see a lot of on social media towards other women, and this huge judgment. I went onto Mumsnet very, very briefly once to ask about what people were doing. It was just as my daughter was approaching, you know, her senior school years, and I wanted to know what people were doing about exams and getting into new schools. And a torrent of abuse from a very simple question about how it was mothers like me that were trying to skew the system, how I was pushing my daughter too hard, how I should never, ever be considering the schools I was considering, how getting her to even think about doing exams was absolutely outrageous. I was amazed. I've never been back. I found it a really, really toxic place. And I find that women that want to engage in this kind of communal attack are quite extraordinary.
It's a very strange thing. It's a very strange thing. I mean, I think I find Mumsnet a great, it's a great resource of information. I mean, I read through threads. I've never posted actually either a question or an answer. And I mean, it's in it right to say that in many respects it can be a very supportive environment. But I think that there are absolutely, as you say, some strong trigger points. And I think that education is, you know, education is absolutely one of them. And in a way that, you know, is entirely understandable, because it is, you know, it is so important. I mean, especially when one looks at this, you know, current debacle, it's no wonder that people get as worked up as they do. I mean, I do understand it.
Well, it goes. Your book goes deep into the heart of this type of thing, and certainly school gate politics. And I can't wait to read it.
Well, I hope you enjoy it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. That's Harriet Tice. Her second book is The Lies You Told Me. It is published by Wildfire, an imprint of Headline. You've been listening to Monocle Reads, thanks to the production team of Nora Hall, Steph Chungu and Charlie Filmer-Court. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.